Today on Shipment from Shiloh, Greg, new to Netrunner, asks for advice on what to bring to an upcoming store championship. We evaluate his playstyle before choosing successful runner and corp decks for him to dominate with. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. What's crack-a-lackin', runners? Welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham, and today I'm joined by one of my good buds. It's Greg. Greg, how are you?
I'm great, Graham. How are you?
Great, man. Thanks for joining me on the show today. Greg is relatively new to Netrunner, but he wants to go to a store championship this year, and he said, Graham, can you help me out? And I said, sure. And you were also like, Graham, do you want to record a podcast about it? And I was like, yes, that is great.
I'm just trying to swindle you into giving me free coaching.
That, you know what? That's legit, though. So, Greg, I mentioned that you're a little bit new to the game, but I wanted to dive in a little bit more into who you are, because I don't know you, and the listener doesn't know you, so no one knows you, and we got to fix that. And we're going to do that in our first segment called Searchlight. So, Greg, what is your, like, gaming background, and then how did you get into Netrunner?
Gaming background? Yeah. I definitely played, like, plenty of video games growing up.
Plenty of video games growing up, huh?
Healthy sampling. My main game since college has definitely been League of Legends.
Yeah.
Which I've devoted probably an unhealthy amount of time towards, and should probably be better at it than I am, given that amount of time. Outside of video games, I've definitely gotten more interested in, like, strategy board games over the last few years. Stuff like Dead of Winter, and I just got Mechs vs. Minions, the League of Legends strategy board game.
It's like your two favorite things combined. League of Legends really and board games.
Exactly. I think I went through the same, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon card phase everyone did in elementary school.
Of course, yeah.
I played Magic with, like, the two other kids in my church youth group who played Magic.
It was, nice.
Like, bring our cards and retreats. All that fizzled out after a while. I made a really bad trade in Pokemon cards once, and I just felt really bad afterwards because I, like, traded one of my sister's cards, and then she was sad.
But oh, no!
I shouldn't have done that. So I got myself out of Pokemon cards so I wouldn't destroy any more family relationships.
That's probably smart. Yeah, yeah.
So then working our way around to Netrunner, Graham, I met you through my wife, Melissa.
That's true.
You're really passionate about Netrunner.
I am.
And you were staying at our house one time, probably like a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years ago by now.
Sure.
And decided to bring it over and teach us how to play. And I thought it was really cool. You are obviously super passionate about it, which makes it more exciting to learn. A few times you would come over, we would play a couple games, and then you said, Greg, you should come to a store championship. So I went to a store championship about an hour away last year.
Mm-hmm.
Where all I had was the core set and two data packs, I think. I borrowed some cards from you, and I ended up getting... my goal was to not lose every match, and I accomplished that.
Nice.
I won twice, actually, I think. I ended up in next to last place. But
no,
I wasn't last place.
You were in the top 10, if I recall.
I was ninth place. I made the top 10 cut.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. And so store champ season's coming up again. It's been a little while since we played, since you moved farther away.
Yes.
I think probably outside of that store champ day where I played 10 games, I probably only played like 20 or 30 actual matches of Netrunner. So
sure.
Not a ton of experience. I obviously don't have a lot of cards.
Well, that's pretty sweet. Now, a couple things that I wanted to say about that. It was a ton of fun to teach you and Melissa how to play Netrunner because most of the time when one teaches someone else Netrunner, it's a two-person game, so it's like a one-on-one experience. But for us, I loved the game so much that I didn't mind not even playing. So I had you and Melissa play each other, And then I would just, like, go back and forth and help answer questions when Melissa's like, what does this card do? Or when you're like, Graham, how I have no idea how I'm supposed to score this, or whatever it was. So, and I thought that worked pretty well. You and Melissa both seemed to enjoy that process, so that was cool. And then for that store champ, I remember trying to pick out decks based on the cards that you had to try to minimize how many cards you had to borrow.
Exactly.
And, you know, that was pretty successful. So, Greg, what do you like about Netrunner, and what makes Netrunner, like, a unique game from your perspective?
So, I think that what initially stood out to me was the asymmetric aspect as being really interesting and really engaging. I liked that even asymmetrically, the two sides are actually pretty significantly different. It wasn't, like, trivial differences.
Sure.
You just had access to different, like, similar cards that did the same thing. It was, like, very different roles and very different ways to play the game.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up liking the runner side more than the corpse side, but I think it's cool that a lot of people probably prefer one or the other and feel more comfortable playing one or the other, and then sure. generates a lot of interesting discussion around what you like to do and why you like to do it.
Yeah.
I think the universe is a cool idea. I'm a software developer, so it's I enjoy, like, tech-related things.
Mm-hmm. Something else that I know about you, Greg, partially because of your fandom towards League of Legends, is that you're a fan of competitive-minded discussions.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Netrunner can be a competitive game and you have to make choices not only within a game of Netrunner, but when you're considering, like, what your opponents are likely to be playing, you know, all these kinds of meta decisions, that all kind of harkens back towards your League of Legends experience, yeah?
Yeah. I think the fact that it's a set card pool, like, it's not booster pack driven like Magic, really makes that discussion more meaningful. Because I mean, yes, there are a lot of cards to buy, but the, like, economic discussion isn't around, can I afford to spend $100 on a single card on eBay, right? It's
right.
Like, what have I been able to accrue over time?
Yeah.
And it also, Netrunner has, like, a tremendous burden of knowledge aspect.
Yeah.
And I think, like, playing a game like League over a long time and playing other similar things that have just, like, huge burdens of knowledge helps me, like, you kind of get stamina for that. You get less frustrated when something happens that you had no idea could possibly happen. I think Melissa had a little more trouble getting used to that. I think it kind of turned her off. And I, like, got our first data pack and played a card she'd never seen before. And she had to, like, discard her whole hand or something. And yeah, just be, like, having a better spirit as you go into something and being able to admit, like, I don't know all of the cards. If I were, like, a professional Netrunner player, I could play around this. But it was still really exciting. I was still familiar with a lot of the really popular cards because I would hear you talk about it, or I've enjoyed listening to your podcast, so I know, like, Cerebral Imaging is a jerk.
Yeah.
it's awesome to talk about stuff at a level even if I can't play it at that level, which is kind of also how I feel about League of Legends.
Yeah, cool. So let's get into our store champ discussion. We're getting ready for the big event. It's coming up, and we're going to talk about it in preemptive action. Let's start with the runner side first. What kind of runner decks have you enjoyed? What have you played before? And we'll kind of dissect that and see if we can find something similar for you.
Sure. So I've played a little bit of each one in just our casual matches. I took to that store championship Gabe deck.
Yes.
That was relatively simple, I think. I don't remember it having some, like, huge combo I had to pull off.
No, I think it was pretty straightforward.
Right.
It used Account Siphon and Aaron Marone, which is just two powerful cards that synergize, yeah. Right?
Exactly.
And then just a bunch of other good stuff.
Right. I remember enjoying Eddie Kim from our casual games just because his ability opens up a really unique way to, or like, a unique attack vector on the corp that basically no one else can do, where you can trash operation cards.
Yeah.
I think that's probably even more meaningful now that Friends in High Places is restricted, right? Or is it banned?
Friends in High Places is actually banned. Thank you, Jesus. So, so there's fewer installables, more operations. Sure. Eddie Kim does more punching. Yep.
Right. I just thought it was cool that he could do something that really no one else could do.
Yeah, definitely.
His ability felt more unique than other abilities do, I guess I should say.
Whenever I go to make an Anarch deck, my default is always Eddie Kim because his ability is just generally good. And then I'll only change it if I think someone else's identity meshes more with whatever strategy I'm building. Right. But yeah, he's great.
I obviously played some games with Shaper. I've probably only used Kit, if I remember correctly. I think Shaper felt the most straightforward. There wasn't a lot of like getting around something or reacting. It was like the court probably knew what I was trying to do when I was playing my simple, mostly core set Shaper decks.
Yeah.
But you were still, the cards were strong enough or efficient enough that you could still largely do that anyway.
Right, right. Well, if we're picking out a runner deck for you, then I think it has to meet a couple of conditions. One is that I don't think it should be overly complicated. I don't think it should have this weird, you know, 7-card combo. I think the more straightforward it is, the easier it is for you to pick up, right?
Right. Or alternatively, I think I could over-focus on that 7-card combo and not know when to, like, give up and just play out the game differently.
Right, right. That's true, too, because sometimes you have to abandon ship on whatever it is. Some of these combos end up being a little bit fragile, too, and that's kind of gross. So,
right.
Secondly, something that I know about the Gabe deck is that it just ran some powerful events, you know, between Account Siphon and Inside Job, and then same old thing to get those back. Like, you know, those are both really impactful events. So I think a deck that has just strong core cards at its center is going to be pretty effective, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what corp you're playing against, Inside Job, always good.
Right. So one of the things I appreciated about the Criminal deck, I think, is that it had some outs for me because I didn't have that entire knowledge of the card pool.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I can use Inside Job if I happen to come up with an ice and I have no idea what it could be. It's safer than, like, some, you could probably guess what an ice is, or at least say it could be one of these two dangerous things, but I'll avoid it. Or if it's not one of those things, it's totally fine. I don't have enough knowledge of all the cards to always make that choice. So, like, Inside Job is helpful in that it's okay that I can't guess what that card is, because at least for this turn, I don't have to worry about it. Or being able to expose cards is kind of a similar idea, where it reduces the burden of knowledge a little bit as you're going into the game. I know pro players, I think, kind of scoff at exposing, because they can usually guess with a high enough probability what a card is that they don't actually need to expose it. But that was helpful for me. I enjoyed checking, like, what an asset was or something sometimes.
And a nice thing about having some kind of expose effect or maybe a generally useful card that usually doesn't make its way into decks is that your opponents don't expect anyone to be running those. So maybe you're playing against a guy and he's like, I'm going to put down this cerebral overrider that can do brain damage, and you don't know that it's a trap. And then you are like, cool, well, I run two infiltration, so I'll just expose that. Oh, it's a cerebral overrider. I don't want that.
Exactly.
Cool. So let's flip over to one website that might be a good place to start. It's called knowthemeta.com. That's K-N-O-W, themeta.com. And this is a Netrunner website that kind of pulls aggregate tournament information and is going to help us pick out some strong IDs and maybe some strong decks as a starting point. So when you go to Know the Meta, click on Tournament Drill Down and just click on Revised Core Set. That's the most recent meta. That's the most recent release that they have right now. Even though the new data pack Sovereign Sight came out a couple weeks back, but there hasn't been that many tournaments and that much new information since then. there's not been a whole lot changing in the Netrunner meta since Worlds, which was at the beginning of November. So anything that we can draw on from the Worlds tournament is going to be pretty relevant, I think.
Awesome.
So first, let's start with Shaper decks, because I think we're going to rule them out. But also, a Shaper won Worlds, so I think it's worth talking about.
Sure.
Haley was the ID that won Worlds, and she lets you install two cards of the same type for one click each turn.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the deck that won Worlds, mm-hmm. It's called Laguna Lock Haley on Netrunner DB, mm-hmm. and it's a great deck for someone who's very well experienced. And obviously the guy who was playing it had played all the different matchups that he expected to see for that one tournament, and it was really strongly tweaked for that one mm-hmm. meta. So there's a couple reasons why I don't think this is good for you. One is that it is filled with tech cards, like very specific cards for very specific matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to learn when to play each of those seems like a lot of work on the front end for you, and that's part of that. What did you call it?
Burden of knowledge.
The burden of knowledge that might make it hard for you to actually play the deck.
To basically to know, like, this is a good time to use this card, or this is the card I need right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's also very specifically teched for that one week, and, you know, people who play Netrunner tend to be pretty creative and like to try a bunch of different things, and I don't think at a given store championship that people are going to be playing all the same stuff that was played at Worlds. There'll be some of it, but I don't think you have to tech quite so heavily for specific things.
Sure.
If you were to play a Shaper deck, it might be worth pointing out a couple of good things that he's got going on here.
Mm-hmm.
One is that he's got this package built around Sacrificial Construct, which prevents installed programs from being trashed. And mm-hmm. then there's two viruses, one clot, and then there's two copies of Tapeworm.
Mm-hmm.
And purging, when the court purges, it trashes those.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sacrificial Construct keeps those cards in play. Tapeworm in particular is a really good economy card if you can keep it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use the event Peace in Our Time to give the court money, which then in turn gives you more Tapeworm money.
Got it.
So that's kind of that package, which is really popular in Shaper builds.
Makes sense.
And then the other thing I was going to point out is that he's got three indexing, which might be the most powerful run event in the game now that Account Siphon is gone and Mad Dash can be paired with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you use indexing to rearrange the top five cards of their R&D, and then you use Mad Dash to run in, and assumedly you've put an agenda on top, and so then you can Mad Dash in and get an extra point out of the deal.
Cool.
So what are your takeaways from this deck list?
I think it's interesting that Tapeworm is such high influence, like, from Criminal, but Criminal seems to be in such a bad spot right now.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Same with Information Sifting, right? Like, he's taken really powerful, and almost all of his influence is spent on Criminal cards.
Mm-hmm.
But Criminals aren't in a great place to use their own cards. So it's interesting. I don't know. I think that's actually the thing that sticks out to me the most.
Yeah. No, I think that is really interesting. So yeah, he's got tons of different cards in here, and I think this is a deck that one would have to practice with a lot in order to be able to play it. So I also think most Shaper builds are going to be built out of this shell, whether you're playing Haley or Smoke with a Stealth Rig, or even like Kit, which is also pretty popular. But I think Kit still borrows a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm. I should also say he has just a single copy of a lot of cards, which makes it doubly important to, like, recognize this is the situation when I should use this, or like, it's actually a worse version of what's happening to me right now, so I need to hold on to it.
Or like, oh, this is what's happening to me and I need my one specific card that I know that I have in this deck and I can dig for it.
Yep. I think I'd feel more comfortable having a lot more twos and threes of cards and not so many just a single card.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so I'm just going to cross off all of the Shaper faction. If you wanted to build maybe like a Magnum Opus kit deck and then just borrow some of these ideas, that's probably not terrible. But otherwise, I don't particularly think Shaper is a good fit for you.
Sure.
You brought up a lot of the criminal events or criminal cards that were in that Haley deck, so maybe let's look at criminal right now?
Sure. So you mentioned the Note of the Meta website. On the very homepage, it just lists runner factions over time and corp factions over time. The revised core set comes out, criminal plummets. Goes down like super fast. Like faster than Bitcoin.
Topical reference.
My boss gave us all a small amount of Bitcoin for our Christmas gift, and it went down like 30% the next day, and he got super mad.
Oh,
so now I get to be mad at him because he gave me some cheap Christmas gift instead of giving me some, I don't know. But yeah, so I was a little sad that I took Criminal last year. I think Criminal was my favorite before, probably. And now they're down. I know that doesn't mean I can't take Criminal this year, but I also think it'd be cool to try something new. So,
sure, yeah. Sure.
And it just seems like a great time to try something other than Criminal.
Yeah. The only thing that I'll point out about Criminal is that there was a recent Chicagoland store championship that was won by Steve, is the ID, not the person who played it. Trevor's the guy who played it. Steve is the ID. First time you run HQ each turn with Steve, you get to choose two cards from your discard, and then the corp removes one of those from the game, and then you get the other one back into your hand. So it's like a weird recursion. And his build was Aesop's Steve. So the idea is that you've got cash in faction, which gives you two credits when you install it, and then you can sell it to Aesop's for another three. And then Harbinger, when you install it, it gives you nothing, but then the first time that you trash it, you like install it again face down, so you get like double Aesop's triggers from selling it twice.
Interesting.
So then you use the Steve ability to get back caches and Harbingers, plus you also get three Tapeworm in faction. He's included an information system. He gets his three inside jobs. So he has just a lot of good stuff criminal, and then he's got, you know, some good breakers, and the gauntlet is his console. So the more you get to access an additional card from HQ for every piece of ice that you broke all the subroutines on during an HQ run. But his ID triggers off HQ, so, you know, instinctively people are going to want to ice up HQ, and then he kind of benefits from that, from the gauntlet getting the extra accesses. So if you were going to play a criminal deck, I would recommend this because it feels a little bit like that Gabe, but you build up a little bit more of an engine, a little bit slower start, and then as a result, you turn into a super Gabe where each time that you run HQ, you get back something that you can sell to Aesop's, and each one of those runs is worth like 5 or 6 credits. But you said you want to try maybe something different. So let's talk about Anarch, hey?
Let's do it.
So, on Know the Meta, the first ID that pops up is Max, as under the most impressive IDs. Usually you're using Max to set up really quickly, and she's relatively easy to play now that there are breakers that install themselves from the bin, right?
Right. So that seems like a must-include for her, probably.
Yeah. I think you got to use all three of those breakers. I see a lot of people use Amakua with her because it's just a really strong AI breaker, but you use multiple copies of it, so you're more likely to, even if one of them gets trashed, you might get another one back or whatever. That said, I think she might be a little bit tricky to run because you are trashing like half your deck.
Right.
And if there's something that ends up in the bin that you feel like you want or need, it might be hard to kind of play around that. Also, you pretty much have to use Levy as your restricted card so that you can get back your deck.
Right. That's the one that just lets you shuffle your entire discard back into your deck, right?
Exactly. So you kind of get to, you draw all the way through your deck and then you get to do it all again.
I think I just could see myself getting disappointed if I'm like faced with some situation and I know the card I need to get past it, and then I just happen to trash it.
Yeah.
Then I'm waiting until I get Levy AR, and then if I accidentally trash Levy AR, it just seems like it can spiral out of control really quickly. So I mean, obviously people have been successful with her, but I think I need a little more, or a little less like variation between like best case scenario and worst case scenario for the deck.
Yeah. Then my last suggestion for you would be a deck called Comrades Val, which was, it's won a recent store championship in the UK, and it did really well at Worlds. Mm-hmm. Multiple people were on it. A couple things that are notable about this. One is that it's using that indexing Mad Dash combo that I referenced earlier as that high impact event.
Right.
Even though you're in a 50 card ID that would maybe make the deck less consistent, all of your most important stuff you have at least two, if not three, copies of.
Right.
There's a ton of draw cards, so you can, in theory, find stuff fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses just generally strong, efficient cards like Amakua. Mm-hmm. It uses Film Critic as its restricted card, which is a nice luxury to have. I think a lot of people are going to be on Obakata Protocol and Ikawa Project, both of which are agendas that protect themselves, and Film Critic gets around that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there's a rebirth in here that lets you change your ID whenever you want. So you start the game with Val, you give him the bad publicity, so all your runs are cheaper. And then later on, you can rebirth into like Eddie Kim and start trashing all their operations and stuff.
Cool.
So what do you think?
Actually, I think that's pretty cool. So I guess the one hesitation, I remember you mentioning in the past that Anarchs have had like economy problems. Do you think this deck has what it needs in order to not be money starved?
Short answer is yes. Longer answer is it doesn't have an unlimited source of economy.
Right. So no, like Magnum Opus or Aesops or...
Exactly. Exactly. So you kind of have a set amount of money in your deck, which is only offset by the fact that you can give them more bad publicity with Mining Accident if you play it at the right times.
Mm-hmm.
Mining Accident says that the court must pay 5 credits or take 1 bad publicity. Mm-hmm. So they get to choose. So if you really want to give them the bad pub, then you play it when... Like, maybe you make some runs, they res some ice, now they're down to, like, 3 or 4 credits, you play it, you force them to take the bad pub, and now they're already at, like, 2 bad publicity, because you already started with 1.
Bad publicity is what you... I can use that to break subroutines, is it?
They are credits that you get at the start of every run that you make that you can only spend during that run.
Got it.
So that's, it's kind of like a mini stim hack effect, if you will. Uh-huh. But they end up being really powerful. It helps offset the expensive breaking costs of mm-hmm. Black Orchestra and MK Ultra.
Sure.
It also means that if you've got some counters on an Amakua, that you're breaking ice for free, basically, because mm-hmm. Amakua is already crazy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. Good. Yeah.
I like it.
I think this is a winner.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, then let's switch over to the corp side. So what kind of corp decks have you played in the past that you've really enjoyed?
So I feel less strongly about corp in general, just because I think I still feel less comfortable playing on that side of the table.
Yeah.
All of my numerous wins at that storage championship last year were on the runner side.
Copious winning streak that I had.
Exactly. I think I actually won against one deck that you lost to, or Ross lost to, another one of our friends, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to corp. I feel like I read, or maybe Michael Boggs interview episode even, I feel like I heard someone say that, like, Wayland's shtick is, like, being really overt about what they're doing and then still doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, I would worry about playing, like, Jinteki or something, like, really trapped or, like, really hidden information focused. Just because I don't always know if something looks obvious or doesn't look obvious, right?
Yeah.
Like, put a card down and advance it once and think I'm being super sneaky, but someone who's more comfortable with the game might like know immediately that's a June bug or something like that.
Sure.
I think I want to stay away from, I mean, obviously any corp deck is going to have like some hidden information aspect and like based on assets and agendas. But I think that comment kind of sells me on Wayland just because I'm afraid to do some of those things that require tricking the person or aren't favorable to me in a matchup where I know less than the other person.
I know what you mean. And that way you're not trying to create situations where you're trying to leverage hidden information, and you're not trying to like make lots of bluffs where you have to think about what image you've portrayed to your opponent, so then how do you act on that? You're kind of eliminating some of that back and forth.
I also don't like side games, or side games, as some people call them.
Side games. Jake, you're the side game man. Sorry, Jake.
I just don't like adding more chance into a game that already has chance in it.
Sure. No, that's legit. All right, so we're just going to rule out Jinteki as a faction. Just get rid of it.
Do it.
You mentioned Wayland. I've mentioned to you that I really like Titan, and I think that you could possibly like Titan.
Sure.
There's one caveat to that. So the Titan deck, generally speaking, you're trying to score out Project Atlases, which when you score Project Atlas in Titan, you get to place an extra agenda counter on it, and then those agenda counters can be used to instant speed search R&D for a card. So that does usually one of two things. The main thing is that it helps you find your next Project Atlas or fast advance card to then effectively chain together Atlases. And then you're using fast advance cards. Usually they're operations, something like a Trick of Light to move advancement tokens from your ice maybe onto an Atlas, two tokens for one click. Alternatively, there's Audacity in Faction, which you have to trash your whole hand, but you get to place two counters in one click for free. So a strong effect with a drawback.
Sure.
The other thing that Atlas counters are really good at is countering indexing. So, you know, indexing, the runner plays it against you, they assumedly put the agenda on top, and then they play Mad Dash, and they're like, yeah, this is the best. So then they get past all of your ice, and then they say, okay, I'm going to access. And then you say, before you do, I'm going to spend this Atlas token to pull up Cyberdex Virus Suite or whatever card you want. It shuffles the deck. Then they access the top card, and it's not what they wanted.
Yeah.
The Mad Dash thing triggers where then they take the meat damage, and they're like, no, curses!
That's actually really cool. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. It's a subtle side effect, but it's notable in a meta where basically everyone who's not criminal is playing indexing. So
it reminds me of the first time you used Jackson Howard on me and I got super mad.
You were so mad. You were like, that card is broken.
I thought it was the most busted piece. I don't know.
Well,
I calmed down over time.
It was strong.
I'm also glad it's not in the game anymore.
I will say that both HQ and Archives are way more relevant now that Jackson Howard's gone.
For sure.
But I don't blame anyone for playing Jackson Howard before, because I think it was the right move. Anyway, so the problem with Titan is that anyone who has, like, Clot with multiple SatCons is, like, really hard to beat. Because you're basically just trying to rush out, and your ice is not necessarily very hard to get through once someone's set up. So if they can slow you down and make you spend multiple turns purging just to get rid of the clot through multiple SatCons. So, and that combo is very potent against you because Clot says you can't score an agenda the same turn that you installed it. Basically, you can't fast advance. It's a virus, so if you spend your turn purging, it says that it trashes itself. Clot trashes itself. But then someone has a SatCon, they can just trash the SatCon to save the clot, and you've wasted your entire turn.
Oh, you're saying Sacrificial Construct.
Yes.
Sorry. I thought you were saying Sat and not Sac.
That is my fault.
Heard of before. That's okay.
Yeah, so that clot plus Sacrificial Construct combo is quite a thorn in your side.
It is.
And traditionally, you don't have much of an out against that, except to just put in a bunch of tech cards.
Mm-hmm.
Wayland doesn't have a lot of good, like, defensive upgrades to make your scoring remote, like, really taxing. So instead, sure, they have to fast advance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be questionable depending on who you end up playing. If you played against an Anarch player, you'd probably be fine. But if you played against a savvy Shaper player, you might just feel like you have no outs, and you might be kind of frustrated with Titan.
Mm-hmm.
The other Wayland identity that's been doing pretty well is Scorpios.
Mm-hmm.
And Scorpios is basically trying to create a lockout, because Scorpios says whenever a runner card is trashed, you can remove the runner card from the game instead. Mm-hmm. Use that ability only once per turn, though. So the idea is that you have lots of ice that have trash a program subroutines, and then you would use something like Marcus Batty to trigger those subroutines.
Mm-hmm.
But Marcus Batty forces you to play a side game, which you might not like. True. Also, you get Hunter Seeker, which only triggers if they steal an agenda last turn.
Mm-hmm.
Film Critic does kind of counter that, because you're not technically stealing with Film Critic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, you have to, you're kind of playing a different puzzle. And instead of trying to score out normally, you're more like just trying to attack the runner's board.
Mm-hmm.
And you might install an agenda that you're very sure they could get with the hope that you have the Hunter Seeker in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of that implicit threat. But you're kind of not playing the same traditional Netrunner that maybe you enjoy playing. So
that's true. So, I guess one of my questions is, do you think Max is... She was the most...
impressive, like, hottest, or something?
Most impressive, right? So it sounds like Scorpios is good against Max because she's forced to trash something every turn.
It is.
Do you think that might be a good bet to make for this?
Max struggles heavily against Scorpios, and there's a chance that you could play against a Max. I don't think everyone's going to be on Max, but you could... There's definitely a chance that you could play one or two Max in a five-round tournament, and those are going to be pretty easy matchups for you.
Yeah. I think I would lean towards Scorpios. We can figure out how to play this one side game.
Right. Right. And you also, you don't rely on the side game, right? Like, that's one thing you can do, but you can also hit him with a surprise Archer res, or... You know, you've got Hunter Seeker, so even if they steal one of your agendas out of HQ, you just Hunter Seeker them. And then it also comes with usually some number of copies of Arc Lockdown, which is an operation that says pick a card and remove all copies of that card in the heap from the game. Right. So that's really good if they've, like, overdrawn and then pitched, like, their paperclip or something. You can still get rid of it that way.
Because usually they only include one of each of the heap breakers, right?
Usually one or two. Because they don't have... Anarch doesn't have good ways to search their deck for programs, so they often have multiple copies so they can draw into them.
Mm-hmm.
But Anarch loves to play Inject as a draw card. Basically, you look at the top four cards of your deck, you ditch any programs and put them into your heap, and then you draw the rest. But it specifically says you trash those programs. So if they play Inject and they draw you know, Sure Gamble, same old thing, Paperclip gets binned, and then, you know, Mining Accident or something, you can remove that paperclip from the game right there.
Nice.
With Scorpios. So that's pretty good.
Let's do it. Let's figure out Scorpios.
We're going to figure out Scorpios. That sounds good, man. The other popular decks at the moment in the other factions, I also feel skeptical about. I just want to touch on them real quick. The big deck at the moment is obviously Cerebral Imaging. Specifically, the text on Cerebral Imaging says your maximum hand size is equal to the number of credits in your credit pool.
Yep.
So that gets combined with cards like Ultraviolet Clearance or Violet Level Clearance, which both give you like 3 or 4 credits and let you draw 3 or 4 cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a little bit cumbersome to use in other IDs, but with Cerebral Imaging, it's just like pouring gasoline on the fire, right? And you can.
You don't have to pay the trade off, basically.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah. And part of the reason why that ID is really popular right now is because you can basically put any strategy in there, mm-hmm. and it's just better because you get to all of your cards way faster.
Sure.
So, although there are some like kill combos out of CI, I've also seen just CI Glaciers, mm-hmm. or, you know, the deck that won Worlds was a CI deck that used reversed accounts, which is an advanceable asset that mm-hmm. if the runner doesn't trash it, you can remove a bunch of money from their credit pool with an upgrade called Brian Stinson. And Brian, you can only use if the runner is low on credits, mm-hmm. hence the reversed accounts. But then it lets you play operations from your heap, ignoring all costs.
Nice.
So, like, Violet level costs 5 and Ultraviolet mm-hmm. level costs 6. They're both operations. Yep. So then you get to play them again, but for only a single click instead of 3 in the case of Ultraviolet. Mm-hmm. And then you draw 4 cards and you gain, like, 10 credits. Right. So it explodes really fast if you can pull off some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. I also think I don't want to play, like, the meta deck. If only because I would feel like doubly bad if I take the quote unquote like best deck in Netrunner right now and like never win with it, right? Or,
oh, sure.
I feel like there's extra pressure there.
There's more at stake. I took the best deck that anyone can make right now and I still lost with it.
Right.
Truthfully, I was kind of expecting there to be some most wanted list action regarding Cerebral Imaging after it won Worlds. Because there's not a ton of great counterplay out there.
Sure.
But there has not been, and I don't think there will be, between now and your store championship, so I guess it's still on the table.
Got it.
If it had been addressed, I think the next best deck is probably Controlling the Message out of NBN.
Mm-hmm.
It is essentially a deck all about creating pressure. So you are combining an ID that whenever, or the first time the runner trashes an installed corp card each turn, you can trace them to give them a tag.
Mm-hmm.
So that ID works really well with assets to protect them. And then you put down a bunch of threatening assets that the runner has to deal with or else mm-hmm. let you become too powerful.
Right.
Playing against
an acid spam deck last year was probably one of my least favorite Netrunner experiences. I would maybe feel dirty trying to play like an asset heavy deck.
Sure, sure. Well, then you probably want to stay away from it.
But it sounds really good.
I mean, it doesn't have to be like total death asset spam kind of thing.
Sure.
But the way that it usually wins is by putting stuff into a remote and then forcing the runner to run through and check it. But the remote is usually a Data Raven, which forces them to take a tag on encounter. Mm-hmm. And then a toll booth, which makes them lose 3 on encounter, and then is expensive to break. So mm-hmm. they have to spend a ton of money and tempo and effort getting through here and clearing tags. And some of the stuff that you might put in that remote to make them check,
mm-hmm.
you could install Advance, a quantum predictive model, which is just a 1-point agenda that says if the runner's tagged when they access this, the corp scores it. So you ran through this data rave and you paid a bunch of money, and then... Yep. You end up just giving the other guy a point. So, nice. Like, how good would you feel being the person who was doing that?
That actually seems like a pretty cool thing to do.
It's super fun. I think CTM is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
But it's also relying more on some of that hidden information and knowing when to hold your cards and when to throw them down in the remotes and that kind of thing, so...
Something I've struggled with in playing against even just our casual games, I feel like, is knowing, like, trying to figure out where the line is where a runner decides if an asset is worth trashing. So, yeah. Which basically means, like, is it okay for me to just put this, like, Melange Mining Corp out by itself right now, right? And I don't always have a good idea of when, like, you would just trash it immediately because you recognize, like, this will mess you up later, or you can just let it go. So when I played against that asset spam deck, I think I just did a really poor job identifying which cards were most important to get rid of first. And this is also when still, like, you could play every Mumbad City card.
Oh, my God. Did you play against that Gagarin deck that ended up winning that was, like, terrible?
Was like...
It was like 59 cards. And
I just knew I had basically every municipal bidding in the municipal building in the city of Mumbad.
Mumbad City Hall. Mumbad Secretary of State. Get your driver's license here.
Like the museum. It was a lot.
Yeah.
He had just had his board was like 15 cards wide, and I just basically like let him take each of his turns.
Yeah.
That was it. Game ended.
So a nice thing about having cards in your runner deck, like indexing, is that maybe you try to help temper the corpse board at the beginning so he doesn't snowball mm-hmm. quite so fast. Sure. But then at some point, there's probably a turning point where you get down to only like 4 or 5 credits, and then they spam out like 3 or 4 things, and you're like, oh man, I can't handle this anymore. That's when you switch gears and you say, okay, I've kept him in check. I've gotten at least 2 points on the board. Mm-hmm. I need 2 more agendas and my Mad Dash to fire. So right. I'm going to index, Mad Dash, and then a couple turns later, index again and hope that I win.
Sure.
So you can kind of close out the game against those matchups where you're like, I am fatigued of trying to control your board. I'm done.
Got it.
Alrighty. Well, there you have it. We're going to try to coach up Greg here in the next couple weeks with a Comrades Val deck and then a Scorpios Lockout deck. So,
what do you think is a reasonable goal here? Do I make top 10 again?
I think making top 10 is a pretty good goal.
I think my personal goal would be to win one match on the corpse side at least.
That'd be cool.
I don't know. I mean, and then just generally to do better than last year. But I think within that, it would be good. I want to get a little better on the corpse side. So,
yeah.
Okay. We'll win at least one corp match, and we'll win at least 3 games overall.
I think that's great.
Really cool if I could like go 2-0 for a round. I'll make that my stretch goal.
Ooh, if you could sweep. Your stretch goal?
Yeah.
Is to sweep a match. That's awesome. So then, Greg, one last thing that I want to ask you about before we wrap this up. There's probably someone listening right now who maybe has never been to a Netrunner tournament, or maybe they've gone out to their local game store a couple times, but like, you know, haven't really felt that competitive. Maybe they don't own very many of the cards. Do you have anything that might be really encouraging to someone who's in that situation?
Sure. So my experience as a definite newbie at the store championship last year was really positive. Everyone was really patient with me. There were some cards where there's like agendas where you have to play them face up, and I totally skipped that line in the text and tried to score it anyway, and the guy was like, whatever, that's fine, right? Like, and just really accommodating. I ended up getting like a prize anyway, because everyone else in like the top 8 had already had prizes that were similar before, so my 9th place finish earned me something.
Yeah,
it was really cool. Everyone was really friendly, really welcoming, and again, I only had the core set and like maybe 2 data packs. I borrowed like 4 cards for each of my decks from you.
Yeah.
So, and I still won, I think, 2 matches on the runner side. So you can always win. It was really cool to put something together. So I think if you can like figure out something you like an ID that seems cool, buy 1 or 2 data packs that help make a cool deck with that, borrow some cards from Graham, and I think you'll have a good time at the store championship. So I would definitely recommend going. I don't think it was too intimidating. Everyone's friendly. They'll remind you if you forget to take your daily cast token. Yeah, it was a great experience, and I'm excited to do it again.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's great. And I'm excited to come up and play with you. But this is going to be fun, man.
For sure.
Well, Greg, that's all I got.
It was great talking to you, Graham. Thanks for the free coaching lesson.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Anytime.
Listener, if you have ideas for discussion topics or questions that you have, whether they are more like beginner-focused questions or if they're just interesting thoughts that you have, please go ahead and share those with me, and that way we can talk about them on the show in the next couple weeks. And you can send that stuff to any of the following contact information. You can find us at least twice a month at shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks to Foundation for the amazing theme music, and thanks to you for listening in. That's our show. This is Graham Carlson signing off for the night. Stay safe, New Angeles, and join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh.
Ready to up your follower count by tenfold?
Yes. What? Greg Gates is going to be on the podcast. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We got to listen to this thing.
Ninth place at the Fanfare Store Championship in 2016.
Wow. That is, we are in elite company, friends.
Top 10.
What? Top 10? Joining me in the studio today, we got top 10 store champ competitor, Greg Gates. Greg, what's going on today? What's you got?